You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries, find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
There were these prints out in Ball Club.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like breaking day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is
size
like
and everything else, they just were too realistic.
And they're
to be
frozen like a tree.
The hand was freaking out.
Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives. Bigfoot lives. It's a movie.
Right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Walls, what you think I've seen? Some strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side with me, and we're talking moxie joke. Well, party gonna have having the St. John's Walls. Sasquatch doing his brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Star.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Discardi. If you'd like to join us in our live discussions during the program, just dial in and join us at 347-996-5877. That's 347-996-5877. Just dial in and wait for the moderator to announce your area code and bring you on to the show. And now everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hey, everybody. This is Marco Bill. And also we'll have Alex is on as well. And Tom had a late flight from Kentucky back, and so he won't be landing until the show is almost over. So he's right in the middle of the flight right now. So Alex, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Marco. How about yourself?
Superb. So anyway, well, we'll get it started off. Alex, you want to do some of the shout-outs for the chat room and all that?
Definitely. We've got some nice shout-outs to some special friends, too. I got a call from AK the other night. But right now, let's get into the chat room. We got everybody in the chat room. We got a large crew tonight. We got JC's in there, of course, from Crypto Fork Corners. And you know Dave will be there shortly if he's not already. From AZCRO, we got JJ. We got Jan from Greater Bigfoot Research down there in Georgia. Jan and his buddy Craig. We got Bill Green. Hang on. We got Leroy. We got Mike K in Ohio. We got the Navigator. We got Rex. Rex is in the house. Snake Man, Bruce from Texas, he's here. And we got Steve, Tom's Gentle Giant. You know, that short guy. What's he like, 6'10", 7'4", something like that. Everybody in the chat room, we wish you well. If you have any questions, try to send them in through the chat room. I try to pay attention. Can't always pay attention to the chat room when I'm trying to listen to Marco and the guests, but I'll do my best. And then how about a special hello to, of course, TJ and Cooney out there in Kentucky. Now, Marco, did I get you right last week? Did they just have a little one?
No. They didn't have a little one. TJ's had some medical problems and stuff, and it's just... It's okay now, and So Roger and TJ and AK, we just send out our prayers and our well wishes for all of them.
Yep, Roger and AK are both in the hospital and supposed to get out any day now. Mm-hmm. I talked to AK the other night. He called me about 10 p.m., which really isn't like AK, so I know he must be kind of hurting and lonely. Marco, he's actually been in the hospital most of the past 6 weeks.
I know. I talked to Chris's girlfriend.
He said he's only been home for the most 3 days at one time.
Yeah.
So best wishes out to AK. If you're up there in Sholo, stop in and visit him. He's at the, I think he said it's the Tall Pines next to the Sholo Hospital. So if you're out there, stop in and say hi. I'm sure I'd love to see you. And a special hello out to Roger, too, down there in the Douglas area. And, Marco, who's our first guest tonight?
Well, guess what? It's going to be JC. Hey, JC, are you there, buddy?
I hope you can hear me loud and clear.
Yeah, we got you.
Okay. I was trying out a new headset. I haven't used this before, so hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, it's coming over okay.
All right. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing very well, JC. Doing very well, and you sound great. Now, you must have just got home. Did you make it out for your 2 days?
Yeah, I was up there yesterday. And got down into the canyon. It was no problem getting down into the canyon. This morning when the rain started, I had to build a road out. Basically, I got a bunch of rocks and stacked them, a couple of tricky spots to get out of there. And I was thinking about your last solo trip, and you warned me about your last solo trip. And I was thinking, I don't want to end up like Alex out in the middle of nowhere, stuck somewhere. So as the rains came in, I got off the mountain. But interesting night, I met a sheep herder lady, and she walked up into my camp. Her dog chased something up by my camp. I don't know what it was. It moved very fast. It probably was an elk. But, I introduced myself. Her dog was a nice sheep dog, and I started telling her about what I was doing up there. And she started sharing some information with me because they live up there the whole summer with their sheep and their cattle. And they run them on the Lukachukai. Of interest, she was talking about, you know, we've got cougars all over the area. That's well known. There's nothing secret about that. She was talking about the big black cougar. And that kind of reaffirms the jaguars being back up in the Lukachukai, and they're taking back the Chuska Range also. You know, we've got eyewitness sightings of these jaguar, big jaguar.
Well, you and I both knew that they were coming for the past 2, 3, 4 years. We talked about that last spring. If they weren't already there, that they would be there soon, I think is what we said.
That's a big kitty.
There is.
And talking with the lady's wife, after I told her some things, she was like fiddling around on her hip, and she goes, I left my pistol down in the canyon. She said, would you walk with me? So I walked her down into the canyon where we met up with her husband, and he started talking about some different things also. And, you know, I asked him if he'd seen any, you know, large bears with a hump on their back type deal, you know, a grizzly type situation. And he was telling me about a year ago through binoculars, he saw a bear as big as a horse just ambling along. And another thing that has come out of the Chuskas on the Navajo Reservation is the grizzlies being back. And they came back all on their own. And I've talked to the sheep herders who've sighted these. So I'm up there trying to get tracks. Also, of course, the furry ones, the large, upright, hairy hominids, they made their presence known last night. They like to bowl. I call it tent bowling. They can take a square rock and roll it like a bowling ball on the side of my tent. It's amazing. I think they can make anything roll if they wanted to. Or whoever it was, you know, somebody out in the middle of nowhere well after midnight playing tent bowling with me, as you will.
They just wanted you to come out and play catch.
Yeah, And then, you know, I love the heavy footfalls. Yeah, I bought a new cot, and I'm telling you, this cot was practically bouncing off the tent floor as some of these individuals decided, you know, to run by. And obviously, you know, think about this. If they're running by your tent in the middle of the night, they're streakers. They are.
Yeah, well,
they're streaking by your tent.
We feel that's what they do. You know, I've spoke to you about this. You've seen some of Mitch's videos. Some of them may be people, but, you know, there's all sorts of footprints around the tent at night. I sent my buddies up there, and they had the same thing happen. He was sleeping. His girlfriend, who's a friend of mine also, said, you know, she tried to wake him up. He wouldn't wake up, but something was outside the tent and stayed out there for 45 minutes to an hour. She tried waking him up twice, and when my buddy wouldn't get up, she just sat there and listened. And she said it sounded like it was walking around the tent, grunting. He heard, you know, footsteps, but grunting. So she knew what the location is, so she didn't want to get out of the tent. You know, same kind of stuff that happens in down here happens up there where you guys are. So it kind of confirms each other, you know, in some regards, I think. How about down near the river now? What's new in the San Juan area?
About a week ago, we got a call from one of our contacts down there, and I didn't expect a lot of activity. Probably till the crops come in, but an older Navajo gentleman, very excited, he doesn't speak that much English, came to our contact's house there on the reservation to talk to her grandmother, and he shared that down at the end of his property near the San Juan River, he saw a very large hairy hominid and plastered in mud. The guy was covered in mud. He had a little hairy dude with him. So we've been trying to follow up with this guy and, you know, get a firsthand. I know I've had our other contacts in the area down there looking over the area, looking for any kind of fresh evidence, prints, anything of that nature. And I've nothing really to speak of unless they get over to this particular island. But this is the first time I've heard about a large hairy hominid covering himself in mud. Of course, it was probably pushing 100 degrees that day down at the river bottom, so I don't know. It's until I talk to the guy, I find it very interesting.
Really interesting. Now, what do you think? Do you think it covered itself in mud to cool off, or do you think maybe it just came down the river? Because I know you don't usually see the larger ones near the river in that area, right? You got your smaller ones near the rivers, and I like how you describe them. I'll let you say it. And then you got the larger ones up in the mountains. So he must be coming down out of the mountains or got kicked out of his group up in the mountains?
Well, that's the thing. We were wondering, too, because it was a large male who hung around all winter, all last summer, and he's been sighted again this summer. A very large male, something we would typically see up on the mountains, you know, the linebacker. And if this large individual was seen with a small one, maybe he stuck around because he became a daddy. I don't know.
That could be.
I just found it really unusual that, you know, something from the mountains of that size and stature would still be down here. It just doesn't make sense to me.
In the heat, especially, but it's that kind of year. We're getting a lot of unusual reports, you know. I think Jan's having some activity in Georgia, and you know, I've never actually asked him the temperature, but it's got to be in the mid-90s and humid there. So, but you know what? You think of the mountain gorilla in kind of cooler climates because it's in the mountains, but the lowland gorilla is more abundant right now than the mountain gorilla, and you know, there's high numbers of them, and they're living in the Congo in Africa. So they're in the high 90s to 100 degree range with humidity. So these animals, if they're similar to the gorilla, and I think we all think they're basically you know, a great American ape, great North American great ape, that they got to be somewhat similar, and I think they can withstand heat maybe a little more than we can.
Hard to say. It really is just unusual for something of that size to be down here. The scragglies, as I call them, that do inhabit the river bottoms, as you would say the lowland gorillas, they're tall. They get pretty tall, but they're not as immense and wide at the shoulder and the six-pack abs kind of thing that you see up on the mountains. They're different.
Now, maybe they just kind of crossbreed it a little bit. I'm sure they could, right?
I don't know. And I just, this large male, if that's what this gentleman saw, down on the river bottom, covered in mud, with a little dude, makes me wonder. You know, is this large male, has he crossbred with this other thing that's down here? I don't know.
Right, right. Very interesting. Gives us a reason to check out the river this year.
Yeah, I'm ready for a trip. How about you?
Yeah, I am.
We missed the big flow. We missed it.
Yeah.
I missed the big flow, the big snow melt.
You didn't get out this year?
Not yet. Not yet. The Navajo Dam was releasing about 1,000 chicken fried steaks, as we say, CFS, cubic feet per second. And I want to find out how long they're going to be doing that release. And I'll get down to some of the remoter parts of the San Juan. Even the section you were on is fairly remote.
Yeah, we had quite the experience. It was a great time. I enjoyed it. And we had a lot of weird things happen, too. You know, I don't want to use that same old
thing
we're talking about. You know, my wife is not really into none of this, JC, anything at all. She'll sometimes sit here and listen to us talk, and she does the frowning and stuff like that. But you know what I showed her just the other night, and she was, oh, my God. I showed her a picture, and you got the similar picture because we took them together, of the footprint in the water that was dissipating as we looked at it. Well, I showed her that picture, and she was like, well, it looks like somebody just stepped out of it. I'm like, yeah, exactly, except for both of us were right there, and we didn't.
Yeah, something was in stealth mode, and I had scoured the camp, the whole area that morning, and we were making coffee. And I just looked right off the bank because we were camped right there. And here's this perfect 16, 18-inch print, beautiful print. And we're fumbling for cameras and everything. And as we're about to take the pictures, whatever was standing in the print stepped out of it, and it started filling in with water. So something to think about. Another thing the Navajos say, and years ago, I kind of took this to heart, but I took it to heart the wrong way, is a lot of the old sheep herders were saying they're not always here. And I was thinking to myself, is this a seasonal thing, or they just come through every once in a while? And maybe they're right. They're just not always here. I don't know.
As in they're partially here.
I'll tell you what, it's things that make you scratch your head.
Certainly is. Now, while we're straying from the subject of Bigfoot a little, anything on the little reptiles, or I know Bruce will want me to ask, anything about the giant snake?
This thing, I didn't get down yet this year, and I've got some contacts down there that have seen the giant anaconda type snakes, and I haven't got to get down and talk to them at all this year.
Now, are they in the water? Are they in the desert? Are they in the forest? Where are these?
Well, there's no known water snake in the entire Four Corners area. We go to Texas, we go to Louisiana, different places. You have water snakes that dive, go underwater, work the water, catch fish, catch their prey, That's a water snake. We don't have anything of the sort out here. A rattlesnake will cross a river when it has to. Different snakes will do the same, but we don't have an actual working water snake. What I've witnessed dives in underneath the water. The many witnesses I've talked to in this genre of this giant type snakes, and there's got to be a breeding population, no doubt. These are water snakes. They work the water. We saw some smaller ones a few years ago, and they came up out of the water serpent style, and then they dive back under. And they're black with some type of between anaconda python type markings.
Now, actually, that as I sit here, we had also something I believe I saw under the water that on that trip.
Yeah.
Scaly, but it was white. And I remember it went by for a long time. But that's not to say whatever snake it was wasn't an albino, because I've seen albino boa constrictors before.
Yeah. Just what's going on down there, and the thing is, you know the remoteness of the area I took you to, and as we go past the Four Corners area down there, it becomes more remote. And some of these canyons, if something was to try to leave one of these river canyons, it would have to travel up to 50, 60, 70 miles before it found water. So a lot of the things that are down there are stuck there indefinitely. They can never leave. So you have a situation like Australia or a situation like New Zealand where you've got a different kind of breeding population producing different things that can never leave. So you're going to have some strange things being produced out of these areas. Just like you've got the duck-billed platypus, you know, that happened out of isolation. Well, we've got little mini New Zealands and little mini Australias all down the San Juan River where they can never leave.
Right. Right. So they'd have to.
We've got giant porcupine down there. I mean, the porcupine we saw just had a stream of quills down the middle of its back and some light quills on the rest of its body. Definitely a porcupine face, but this thing was huge and different and very curious about us. I would say some of these canyons, they would never see a human being. Just
now,
never happened.
Do you think these extra-large creatures are just Shaquille O'Neal type of the same species, or do you think they're actually, you know, progressing, regressing to new species?
I think we've definitely got an isolated breeding population, and there's definitely some interesting things happening in these isolated canyons with the flora and fauna, definitely, without a doubt.
You know, you mentioned the large bear. Well, they released, and I haven't actually been able to confirm this, but I have been able to confirm the six Mexican gray wolves. But they released, supposedly, two grizzly bears and six Mexican gray wolves in the forest of Arizona last year. The gray wolves were near Mount Baldy, over there on the back of Sunrise Mountain, right near the The two grizzlies, I'm sure, you know, in a good enough winter could migrate up to the Lukachukai. But, you know, that's Arizona, too, so maybe they released them up there, JC.
I'm doubting that because I'm really familiar with the game and fish of the Navajo and New Mexico. I'm very familiar with their budgets. And these sightings are going back several years, and the sightings probably start up around Silverton, Colorado, where there probably haven't been any grizzlies since the turn of the century. And they're making their way back. They're coming down from the northern parts and migrating down in that way. That I would be convinced of that.
Just like the jaguars are migrating from the south back.
From the south back up to the north and taking their north territory back. But you know, I was really excited to hear this lady talking about the giant black cougar, which a cougar is something you see up there fairly regularly, but talking about a giant black cougar, I'm like, that's a jaguar, sweetheart. That's when she started reaching where her pistol was supposed to be, so.
Only a jaguar in the woods can be completely black, right?
Well, JC, I got to tell you, buddy, thanks for coming on tonight. We're running a little late.
All righty.
I appreciate you coming on and sharing with us again. It's been a while, and, well, by golly, hang in there. Keep in touch. There's a lot of things going on.
If only I had all the time I needed, that would be great.
Well, one of these days we'll just do a whole show.
Oh, not on the show. I mean, out there.
I know. But it's interesting to try to, I mean, there's just so many different things. And it's really interesting. Thank you so much, JC.
There's so many unknowns out there, aside from the large furry ones. There's many interesting things out there.
I know. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we'll see you. So you can listen to the rest of the show if you'd like. I'll just mute
you. God bless you guys.
You too, JC. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night, buddy. Good night, JC.
Good night.
Well, Alex,
I know who we got next.
We got Steve Dismore. Steve has been hanging right in there.
Excellent.
Steve, go right ahead, buddy.
How you guys doing?
Hey, Big Steve, how are you?
Well, I've been better, but I'm about to get over.
There you go. Now, I was just thinking about you last night, but I have no way of getting in touch with you, so I didn't know which number's working. So Marco did us a great service by getting you on tonight. So what's new? What's going on in your end of Kentucky? Because we know about the activity in TJ's area, but now I always forget, is it you're about 100 miles from them or about an hour from them?
We're about 4 hours away. Kentucky's road systems are really bad. So actual mileage is probably hovering around 270 miles.
Oh, God, you're a lot bad.
Yeah, he's in far eastern Kentucky, southeastern Kentucky, and I'm in far west, south Kentucky. So basically, both of us live close to Tennessee, but he's on the other end of the state.
And now, which river is it you're near?
Well, let's take your pick. We're by the Mississippi, the Ohio, the Tennessee, and the Cumberland, and they're all within 30 miles of each other, and they all spill into the Mississippi, and then you've got the two lakes, Kentucky and Barker Lake, and Real Foot Lake down below them.
Wow. So you're right in the thick of things, so to speak, and sometimes literally, like just recently.
Well, Kentucky's considered to have, you got to remember, the Ohio River, It runs almost the entire part of Kentucky from, you know, it's Kentucky's surrounded by water except the Tennessee line, and there's little rivers running, you know, north and south coming out of Tennessee, because Tennessee's a higher elevation than a lot of Kentucky. The Tennessee River and the Cumberland River flow north, and then when you start going toward TJ, there's some southern flowing rivers there for just a little ways, and then again, there's some more that flow north again because Tennessee is higher. And what has been going on in the R end of the state, it's made a lot of our local news. It's made it's made a few other things. Is the recreational area, the land between the lakes up there, it's several thousand acres. We've been up there a few times as a team. JC been up there. He knows the place. All their officers and their forces up there, just about all of them have had some sort of a sighting or encounter or came across something that they knew wasn't quite right. And it started a whole lot last year. Now it's exploded. Every one of them has had an encounter. And They've called in a lot of different research organizations to come up there and look, and that's all they're doing. Basically, they'll go up for a few days and have a little look-see, and it's, you know, it's pristine forest there now. You know, it was inhabited by man. They, you know, people did live up there. They had houses up there, but for some reason, back shortly after the, you know, the last big war, they decided to buy everybody out up there. And I did some research into it, and I realized if you want to look on the map and connect the dots, there's a corridor pretty much all the way from top of the country to the bottom of the country of little preserves and giant farmland, you know, several thousand acres owned by one farmer. You name it. It's like a trail. I mean, it's basically what it is. You could walk the length of this, you know, and pretty much not be on private property long. You'd be going back onto, you know, a national forest or a park or something, all the way from Louisiana all the way to Lake Michigan. And I think it's more than a coincidence that they've got that opened up like that to be able to do that. As everyone knows, the Corps of Engineers, the handle and manage the waterways, they own 50 feet from the low, basically it's 50 feet straight up, or the way they figured, if you go straight up in the air from the water's edge and shoot straight in 50 feet, that's owned and maintained by the Corps of Engineers. That's the minimum of that they own. So that's a pretty good trail right there just along the Mississippi River, all the way from the Gulf, all the way up, you know, to Minneapolis, St. Paul, you name it. And I couldn't see why creatures couldn't just have a freeway. That's all it is a freeway. And,
well, that's what they're going to use. They've got to stay near the water anyways. You know, cats can venture a little further away when they're migrating off of south, but they need the water too. They're going to stay within, you know, a day or an hour, a couple hours, you know, whatever they feel they need. They're going to stay near that water. So,
well,
they find little puddles or watering holes, they can stretch it a little, but go ahead.
There was one other interesting thing that I thought about after I talked to Marco today. I do artifact hunt. That's a hobby of mine. You know, old Indian artifacts, I like to find them and at least appreciate them or get them to the people that do appreciate them the most. And I don't dig or nothing like that. I just surface hunt. And one of the people that I know does a lot of hunting in southern Illinois, they've got the Kincaid Mounds over there. And it was considered to be probably the most populous group of Indians that were ever here. That, you know, prehistoric Indians or whatever you want to classify them as. The mounds over there would remind you a lot of a pyramid, but they're earthen mounds. They're just dirt. Well, he had been surface hunting within about 300 yards of where you're not allowed to get near them. And he had found, there's lots of stuff down there, a lot of rock carvings, of pipes, so on and so forth. But he had found a figurine, which has been a lot of figurines found of deer and buffalo, where they've been carved without an antler or something. But this one in particular would remind you a whole lot of a man. The only problem is the shoulders are too big, the head was too small, the length of the arms wasn't right, and the length of the legs weren't right. And it had big feet. And it was found surface hunting. And you do know out in the Northwest, they build the totems and stuff, and they have got a totem for Sasquatch there. They got a totem for, you know, the eagle. They got a totem for the killer whale. All those creatures exist. And my knowledge, your knowledge, and a lot of the listeners are on here and the people that are in the chat room know that, you know, the creatures exist. There's no doubt about it from me or you. You know, we've been too much involved in it. But to anybody that's going out there, everyone wants to say, well, you know, if it was existing, you know, they would already have brought it to the forefront and all that. But as I was, you know, I've talked and said before, it would destroy just about every timber operation, any kind of mining. A lot of the camping would have to change. A lot of the hunting would have to change. all because if that creature exists, according to the government, you got to protect them then. So they do not want them to exist to the point that when people do get good footage and they take it to the wrong source, that it's confiscated. And that's happened many times that we both know about, that all of us know about. And that's the reason I think not only that we should be out there doing this stuff, that when we get it, we've got to get it to the right source before you turn it over to your, if it's a dangerous situation, sure, turn it over to your local law enforcement or Fish and Wildlife. But if it's not a non-dangerous situation, people ought to keep their snapshots, and they ought to keep their home videos, and they ought to get them to people like us to where we can get them into the right hands where the world will know, not just us.
That's it. Now tell us specifically what kind of reports you're getting lately in the western area there.
Well,
where are they coming from? The rivers, the lakes, both, what?
Well, and the Lama Twin Lakes, the LBL up there, multitudes of people this year their cooler stole, they've had their tents drug off in the woods that had food in them. Large objects that, sure, a bear could have probably grabbed a trailer hitch of a camper and, moved it over a few feet. And I'm sure that a bear could have pummeled rocks on top of one of the officers' patrol vehicles up there. I mean, bears are known to pick up rocks and throw them that, weigh 300 pounds and crash in entire car hoods. So that's been the cast off is what I'd heard. They initially were calling all the research people, and they got a few in there that they like that are, well-known for publicity from TV. And they did a lackluster performance by going up there for a short period of time and going, okay, well, where's your evidence and all this? Well, these guys are out working. They go on these back roads to have these happenings happen. But they're smart enough not to get out of their car. And they come back the next day and they show them, well, this big rock, there's no other rocks right here like it. It was, it was thrown on top of my car. And that's kind of as far as it's ever went. I dial into going a little bit further. I dial in there and kind of go a little bit further into it, and I've brought the guys up, and they've got to see some of the things that I've seen. Like, I'm a good-sized guy. You know this. And I've attempted it. I've tried to break a 2.5, 3-inch young hickory tree about 4 feet off the ground, and I can't seem to do it. Even with all my 300-plus pound weight, I cannot break this thing. But me and TJ and, JC and everybody, we was up there, and we found where they had twisted one down right by our camp. And we hadn't had a lot going on until me, JC, and Leonard Dan had went up into the woods looking for signs. Leonard Dan found a nice large print. But just prior to that, I was in the creek bed, and I was trying to, I'd been along it for a long ways looking for a way to get out of it. And they were trailing beside me, and we lost vision of each other. And I looked up ahead of me their ways, and I seen JC, I seen the back of his head there, just going up over the hill. I'm like, hey, JC, hey, hollered at him. And here he was coming up behind me, right here. And then I realized JC was wearing a hat. But the hair color was pretty close. JC, he's not very old, but he's got a little gray in his hair there, and it's pretty long at the time. He had rather long hair. And that's what I seen, I thought, was JC's head, and it wasn't. And when I told JC what I'd seen, well, we was just trailing it. And later that night or the next night, I did some calls. We had a creature come from about a thousand yards back up out of the back of the bay where we was at, and was standing directly across from us. And we tried to get a good recording, but the cicadas at this time of the year and the time that they were there were so loud, you can barely hear yourself, like. So it's kind of muffled. And it's not that it's convenient that happened, because that's what's terrible. There's nothing convenient about that situation. I mean, if you'd have been there, you'd have been able to hear it. It came in plain as day. And, you know, JC, when we do talk, it's one of those things you'll never forget.
Well, you know what? I've heard that story repeated by JC and Bob and you before, so I know it's a true story. I've heard it, you know, repeated a few times, and not always by you. So that story is 100% true. And fascinating things happen when we're in the right spot. That's what it is.
And well, Steve, I want to thank you, buddy, for coming on tonight and spending some time with us. It's been a while, and I hope you come on a little more here. There's a lot of things going on everywhere, and I know you're keeping track of the things that are going around your area there. But,
I'll be getting back on.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. We're getting a little late here.
Oh, no.
We still got two more stories to go, two more guests to go. But thanks a lot for coming on and sharing. And it's nice to hear from you again. You want to?
Sure.
What I'll do is I'll mute you out, and you can listen to the rest of the show if you like.
I'll do it.
Okay.
Steve, give me a call after the show if you can. Marco, who you got next?
Well, we got Chris Allen. Chris, go right ahead, my friend.
Hey, you there?
Hey, Chris. How you doing, my friend?
Doing awesome. How are you and Marco, Alex, and you and Marco, and everybody up there doing, Tom, TJ, Youngblood, and all my friends and fans that are out there? We sent out tons of messages to all my friends and fans off the internet to tune in tonight. And as we were listening to Steve just now on the line, I had some fans that were texting me, "How do I find your program? How do I find it?" So I hope they found it and we're on there. And I've advertised it everywhere from MySpace to Facebook on there today. But I had a lot of questions that I had written down as you had your guests on there from JC and Steve that was on there. And one of the questions I'd like to clarify, we were talking about the Bigfoot covered in mud. I would bet, because I've had horses and cattle before and dogs that will cover themselves in mud, especially in the summertime, from the biting flies.
For the bugs. I was just going to say, for the bugs, too, right? Exactly.
Yeah.
It keeps the bugs off. The bugs can't get through it. It kills the ones that are on there. And, you know, elephants and all sorts of African animals do the same.
They do. They do. It keeps the heat off of them. It also insulates their body from under the sun, but the biting insects, because I have a Rottweiler at it right now, that is going through a serious problem, having chunks taken out of his ear from the flies, and tomorrow I'm going to find a remedy for that, other than covering him in mud. And second, where he was talking about the jaguars, you know, years ago, I was coming out of California going into Needles, Arizona area from the Southern California. And there's a Taco Bell at the exit right there. There's a gas station and a Taco Bell back in 2003. It was the only thing that was at that exit. I went to the trash can right there at the Taco Bell, and there's a giant clover track. Now, I've been in the mountains most of my entire life. I know very well what cat tracks look like. This was huge. It was no mountain lion track that I seen there in the sand right at the trash can. No track walking to it, just like a giant leap. It landed right there at the trash can where I was eating trash out of the trash can. And I just got through saying to a friend of mine that was there, it's like, man, this has got to be something much larger than, you know, the mountain lion. A few months later, I picked up a magazine, and there's a researcher that had been studying for 7 years the elusive jaguar migrating into North America, into the United States region, and they finally captured the first photos of it from the tree cameras that Tom and Youngblood and I set up before when he came up here and we did some investigations. The tree cameras, that's how they actually captured the first photos here in the United States of the jaguars. And
that was down near Tucson in 2002, Chris, but you're right on. That was Tucson in 2002, and they've been readily migrating north. Now, those first photos were, you know, scrawny creatures. But what you want to do, if you're interested in that, you know, it's not a mystery anymore. The Fish and Game here in Arizona has admitted it now. Google Macho B. Macho B. And that was a jaguar, and this was a healthy jaguar. He was not scrawny. He looked like he had been doing well and was going to continue to do well. Now, the Fish and Game, on their own, without permission, a couple of the guys in the area, the ranges, they tagged him. They put a tracking sensor on him, and they had him in captivity for a little while, and something went wrong, and he died. So they got in some big trouble. Both those guys lost their job, and a couple of their supervisors lost their job. But you want to Google Macho B. And, you know, wow. You're right on, though. I had a report just the other night from my buddy Jamie, who got it from a buddy of his, but we're going to go check it out together. And JC will be interested in this, too, because it's from one of his hometowns, Wickenburg. About 45 minutes outside of Wickenburg, guy was on his way back home to California, and he had a large black cat jump across the road, completely across the road. And you think that's far-fetched, but it's really not, because mountain lions can jump 60, 80 feet, so a jaguar could easily jump that too. They're a larger animal. They're a little different than a mountain lion. They have a bigger head. Their method of attack, their MO is a little different, but beautiful, beautiful animal. And then, of course, you know, you got the pets that have been released. There's only a few states in the country, 22, I believe, that have restrictions on exotic pets. And there's 13 states that have 22 states where exotic pets are completely outlawed. 13 states have completely no laws at all. That means you can import anything you want. And Nevada's one of those. Go ahead, Chris.
I was an importer for years. Most of my fans don't know this of myself, but I'm an amateur herpetologist. And when I was living in Atlanta, Georgia, by the way, I'm a graduate. I went to Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, which, by the way, I just now started up as a summer course at Mountain State University, where I'm going for my associate degree up here to get my pilot license so I can get more remotely into areas where hopefully we could fly out and find something below. And I'm doing a two-year there on this. But other than that, I was a herpetologist for many years, and I was an importer. I brought in 100 iguanas a week, for example. I brought in every kind of exotic you could think of into the United States. And there's so many people that will actually, you have to quarantine most of your animals that you bring in the United States, but most of them slip quarantination where you bring them in. You may have ticks and mite infestations on these things, but you have, there's, JC was talking about a giant snake. I caught into the last part of that. I was at Canyon Lake in Texas area, which is my hometown, my home state area. Now, this was back around 2001, 2000-ish. I was standing at the top of Canyon Dam, and I noticed a lot of the children were throwing rocks at a huge snake. Now, there are no giant black snakes in Texas, not even an anaconda, which appears to be black. That's possible to survive and thrive in certain regions like southern Florida, etc. I had witnessed with my friends that were with me and family members that were with me, I'm guesstimating this snake, if not a giant eel, was every bit of 30-ish foot long, and we actually, from the top of the dam down where we saw it swimming, it was just hovering on top of water as the kids were throwing rocks at it. It was way bigger in diameter than any of those children that were down there. And I'm really curious if any of the listening fans and the people in the listening area, if they've witnessed this, if they would send me an email at my email address on your website there to let me know what their experience was with that, because I have no knowledge in my mind. It blows my mind what snake could be 30-plus long. There are only two snakes in the world, actually, the reticulated and the red-tailed python, that get that long. And this is longer than 30 feet. I'm just saying it conservatively at 30 feet and a good, oh, good Lord, he was huge in diameter. And from that height, I really couldn't say, but we actually saw him and stood there and watched for 30 minutes, roughly, until it vanished under the water. And when JC was talking about one of the snakes, it had a pattern on it. There's a snake called the queen snake, and it looks exactly like a rattlesnake when it's underwater. Out of the water, it looks black, but when it's in the water, it becomes luminescent colors on it, and it looks like a diamondback, and it has the only separation that you can see from it and a diamondback is its tail is flat.
how big can they go?
Well, it depends on the region, because it's just like a lot of things in the territory. There are certain ones that can grow larger because they will mix with other snakes. You know, you have a black snake that will mix with them. You have a multitude of snakes that can actually inbreed with them, just like the red wolf and the coyote. You know, they breed together, and you have a supersized red wolf or a coyote. You know, so it's really hard to say, but the snake in itself is only 4 to 6 feet on the average. But that's average.
Now, Florida's having a problem with snakes, and they pretty much think it's beyond control now. They're not going to be able to eradicate them.
That's correct.
And it's just a matter of time before they start going north, you know, into Georgia and then into your direction.
I would say they already have. As long as they can survive the winters, and if they burrowed, you know, you could burrow in logs or in the ground in its own self, and you could sustain yourself through the winters that are fairly mild in the northern Florida, up into the Georgia regions. When you get up in the Carolinas, if you're closer towards the coast region like South Carolina, you have fairly mild winters there. And, you know, as you and I both know, we have traveled everywhere. I know I've been in every state in the United States dozens of times. I've seen things that aren't supposed to be there. I've seen six Gigantopithecus. Three of them that I know of for a fact were Gigantopithecus blackies. Except my first one, which the listening audience may not be aware of my first encounter, but there was a whole yard full of us standing in Chillon, West Virginia, the home of Jerry West, and he's a famous basketball player. And we were standing out in the yard, and we saw this giant ape at the top of a sycamore tree just sitting there an hour before it got dark, and we all stood there. Now, this is when I was a child. A lot of people back then in a rural area, they didn't have cameras, and even then you'd have to have a really good camera at the edge of darkness to take that photo. My daddy suggested.
Were you at Jerry West's house, or were you just going?
No, we were actually on side of his attorney. Mr. Maddox lived there, and my grandmother had a mansion that was right on side of his house. Now, the turnpike since then has taken out all those houses where this was at. But we stood there in the yard. Now, this is me and all my brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles that were there, grandmother, neighbors, all of us in the yard and watched this. He was a champagne color with a neutral skin color. And he sat at the top of the tree just like a regular, like a spider monkey or something, would sit there and pick the hair on your arms. It was sitting there just, you know, rubbing its hair on his arm, looking at it. You could see it pick something and eat it. And it was probably 6 foot tall. It's really hard to get an exact size of it, but it was really large. Now, I give everything a rating of conservative. If I say 6, it could have been very well 7 foot. But we all stood there for an hour until it got so dark you couldn't see it, and it just vanished. And flashlights back then, you didn't have these halogen flashlights or the super high-power flashlights were just readily available, so we didn't have access to something like that to shine a light and see what would happen to it. But it just sat there for the whole time, and for the longest time, everybody was curious, like, well, maybe somebody lost a pet monkey or something that was in the tree. Well, it all began when I was at Sherwood Lake. I had a really good visualization with my oldest son. We stood out there and we watched two of them ripping bark off the tree as they started eating either the insect, as Tom Viscardi suggested they might be eating the insects from the bark. It was late in the evening, bright full moon night on side of Sherwood Lake, Greenbrier County, West Virginia. Now, whether it was eating the insects or the bark, I couldn't tell you that, but I do know that the smallest one was probably around 8 to 9 foot tall. The taller one was just a foot or so taller than that. But then a massive one, the third one, stepped out. It was a pod of three of them. When it stepped out of the shadows of the woods, you couldn't see it in the woods. But once it stepped out in the bright moonlight, it was at least, I'd say, 12 or plus foot from that. It was a good head's height taller than the other two that were out there. And when it came out there, I told my son, I felt fear for my life because it was so close to us that we have got to get back to our campsite. And as I did, my dad was just like, oh, you just saw a bear. And we explained to my dad, there's no way in the world this was a bear. After we explained what we saw, we went out there the next day, and sure enough, the trees where they ripped the bark off, the branches were broke up, I'd say, at least 3 to 4 foot tall above the ground level where they were broke off the tree. The tree was completely stripped down from all the branches and all the bark. And that was where my Pandora box opened up to investigate Bigfoot. And since then, you know, me and Youngblood, when we went out to Arizona and we came back, we went up into the Virginias, and I've looked everywhere for this creature, and we found so much evidence that is out there. I've seen several others since then, but those are the two most visible ones I've seen, second to a Gigantopithecus at Dunlap Hollow at Kanawha State Forest, which I had only a few second glimpse of it as it was sitting behind a tree and peeked out and looked at me, and my second wife, I got her attention. We looked over there, and it was already gone in just a matter of seconds. It may have sat straight up behind the tree, but I'll tell you what, when you see something with a neck bigger than most people's waistline, I'm not about to walk up to the tree and see if it was behind the tree, wouldn't play peekaboo with me.
I played peekaboo with them from behind the trees when I was with Rob and Steve and Tom and Jabba Bob, so I know even me. And the little one was playing peekaboo, and the big one was on my right. He made a move, so I chased him.
Wow.
Not sure what I would have done if I caught him, though, Chris. That's what they were yelling as they were calling me back, too. But, you know, I just basically it was a full moon, and I wanted to get a good look at him or whatever it was. And basically what it was doing was drawing me away from the smaller one. So they're pretty smart, too. They're pretty smart. They're protective. The reason we had stopped that night, we were on our way into a location. We're a good 12, 15 miles off the highway on a dirt road, and we heard them calling. So we fanned out, and Steve, Rob, and I went to the right. Some of AK's relatives went to the left, and Jabba, Bob, and Tom stayed on the road walking in the middle with the firm, and we both had action on each side. So what they were probably doing is we heard whooping and calling. They were probably telling each other that we were coming, you know, when the first set of them heard the truck. We had kind of a convoy that night, so we were kind of conspicuous as opposed to inconspicuous. But later that night, Rob and I got something on the tree cam, on the stealth cam, that I set up on my cam, and we showed that the next day at the reservation, and people were pretty much amazed. You know, Tom and Jabba Bob have that photo. I think it's on the website. It was something definite, walked right by that. We were in a big clearing. We ended towards the clearing. There was a little bit of water left. It was, you know, in the winter it's probably a watering hole, and in the summer it dries up. It was spring, so there was still a little left, and there had been sightings there. So we aimed the camera towards the watering hole, and we slept on the soft but dry ground. And beautiful night, didn't hear nothing, but something walked through the middle of that clearing, and the camera caught it. Didn't see a flash either, so we must have been dozing at the time.
1 minute, Alex.
Oh, all right. Well, Chris, stay in touch, Chris. Stop by the forum. We'd love to start a section for you and for all you got going on over there. So stop by the forum, email me, we'll get it done. Everybody else in the chat room, kudos and salutations, and everybody keep Bigfooting. And until next week, take care and be safe. Marco?
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
1967, my whole life changed. I went to the libraries to find out all I could find out about Bigfoot. We went out to prove that this creature exists.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator. You see something big like that, you figure, well, maybe it'll come charging.
Who are these prints out in Ball Club?
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
Yes, Bigfoot lives.
We're looking at something that's probably over 500 pounds.
We would hear screams, like breaking day. We'd hear these siren-type screams.
But it is sort of like
everything else. They just were too realistic
and
to be
frozen like a tree.
Somebody manufactured this.
The hand was freaking
out. Into the woods.
Female.
Bigfoot creature lives. Bigfoot lives. It's a movie.
Yes, right now.
At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests, Jabba Bob and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold, and a promise till the day that they died. And
answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, myths, and mysteries, legends, tales, and facts. We're all together.